interesting thing is when we applied for patents, the patents were applied, and I find that he's putting up the money, advancing the money for the patent attorney. I find that he is on the patent as a co-inventor with me, Edelstein and Lamoureux. Now, these were all things I had invented before. Now, as time went on, the company ran into a lot of problems. And I felt it should be done in a certain way. Either they did this, you know, certain things, or else I wasn't going to get out. Meantime, I wanted this guy out because he was not doing anything. To make a long story short, the key to the operations, the value, was in the patents. And the patents were assigned to the company. And I figured I had one way of fixing this son of a bitch. And what I did was, I wrote a letter to the patent office. And I told him exactly what had happened. It's very strange because you would never think of this happening. And they wrote me back and they said, whoever it was, said, look, if you're the only inventor, then you just file the same thing as the only inventor and claim, ask for an interference and claim that it's your patent. So I did all this on my own. I studied patent law in a friend's office, and we did this goddamn stuff. And they come back, and now they get a thing is called a court. You know, I mean, a date is set for a hearing on his interference. It's Edelstein versus Edelstein and Lamoureux. Well, they all knew it was mine. They knew they were going to lose it, so they came. And they bought me out, gave me quite a few $1,000 to let them have the patent, and I was glad to get the hell away from the thing. That was my severance with the thing. I can go into what happened later with the company, but I'm now out of it.
When was that?
This is approximately into 1938, part of 1939. Now,
somewhere, and then you moved north.
Came up north. Now, I realized this business was not for me. Incidentally, the son of a bitch went and tried to tie up my money, claiming that he had lent me all the money that he had paid out for the patent and the thing, and that he tied up my money, but I finally won it. And the guy subsequently was running for, and this was all in front of a justice's court, and this guy is running for the city manager of the city. And he comes up for an election, and it turns out that this justice is one of the members of the board. He gets up and he says, I know this son of a bitch. He said, he was trying to do a job on this young guy in front of me in the court. He said, he ain't going to make him. Anyhow. There were a bunch of patents. I don't know whether they ever granted or not. I think they were on the Lanolin. And the business was carried on for a number of years. Some other people bought it and moved it. But that was more or less my end with Lanolin manufacture.
But it whetted your appetite for invention and innovation.
Now, these are some interesting things. I spent about 6 months, you see, while I'm waiting for this to be cleared up without any job as such. And put ads in the chemical engineering news, what do you think? I went up to Chemical Society meeting in Boston, you know, where you put an interview for jobs, etc. Wrote to people I knew. Remember, this is still the Depression. They said they just worried about their job. I was called, a very interesting thing. I'll tell you a story about this. I want this down in the records. Son of a bitch, someday can read it. I was called in for an interview by what was Sylvania Industrial Corporation. Now, Sylvania was an offshoot of DuPont, a cellophane manufacturing. You know how the antitrust business set up and the companies had to throw off certain things. DuPont sort of throwed off the Sylvania company for the cellophane type of thing. Cellophane was becoming a generic word. Anyhow, I mean, they had it from every angle. Anyhow, the Sylvania company at that time was interested in doing some research, which later I found out was on cellulose, ether, soluble, and caustic soda. And we talked, and after they met me, they said, I'll tell you what I found out later that I knew, and I didn't fit or whatever in the job. Then I was called into a couple other places, and the only place that suited, that offered me a thing was a little company called Hart Products Corporation that was making textile chemicals. Now, I had a pretty good name because I had written these papers, which were the official publication for the AETCC on mercerizing. So I wasn't an unknown in terms of doing research or technical things. GAF offered me a job, but it was still a German company at the time, and a Jewish boy, it was a pretty good deal that time, $100 a week, which was a good salary, I knew at the time. This Hart Products, a little company, small company, the owner of the company was an MIT graduate of 1915, Jewish fellow. And they had a good name in that they had developed a lot of methods for the study of sulfonated oils, which were used in textiles and leather, and he published a number of articles. Sounded good, and this guy offers me a job. He says, give me $50 a week and 2% to be the director of research or development of new products or whatever you want. And you get 2% on anything developed under your work. Well, that's what I wanted, the chance to. So I took this job. Now, I had never, at the time, I came to New York and met this guy, and his offices were in New York. I didn't see the plant. And he was a bachelor and entertained showgirls. And I had a big, they had a fancy apartment up on the Riverside Drive. And all seemed very attractive to me, mainly because of the deal that I've been. So I come back to Chattanooga, call up Mildred, and we move. I take the job. Now here we move the hell out, and I find a place in Elizabeth, New Jersey for us to live. And I go out to the plant. I see the goddamn plant. I go to the office in New York first, and then we go out to the plant with all our help. All he had was a chicken coop. It had been a sort of a little farm there. There was a barn in which you had the chemical plant. And a chicken, actually a chicken, that had been in the low branch, which he made into a laboratory. And he had a half a dozen chemists working, and they'd done good work there. And I started to say, what the hell am I? Moved all the way up. And then I said, no. I told Miller, she said, what the hell's the difference? They do good work. But it's a chance for me to do even better. So, take the job. Now, after a week, I find that the owner, the head of the company, who is a chemistry graduate from MIT, is now coming out every afternoon watching what we're doing and showing me how to work with me. I said, I'm going to put up with this shit if I'm fired. So I go into Mildred. I said, Mildred, I think I've made a mistake. I was supposed to be hired as the head of research, and I find that I'm just being a guy working. I'm not going to. But she says, well, you do whatever you think. She says, we have to go back to Chattanooga, or whatever we have to do, you do it. So I go and see this guy. He's a little bitty sharp guy, I see. And here I'm still a kid. What am I, 39? I'm 26, 27, whatever it is. Moved out now, all the way, give up that big farewell party from Chattanooga and the family. I go up, and he's got a big chair, the big desk, and I look for a chair that's up higher. And I get up, so I sit higher. And I go, and I tell him, I said, look, you hired me to do this this and that. I said, you can take the job and stick it up your ass if you're going to tell me what to do and do it. I said, I'm capable. That's what you hired me for. I will not. She says, I don't mean it. I don't mean it. She said, you do what you want. Anyhow, from there on, everything changed on mm-hmm. the thing. I went very quickly. The first thing they had, oh, it's a long story. You want it?
Oh, yeah.
You want all this story, because these are the roots that begin to be a lot of real developments. At that time, quarter after four.
Yeah. We shan't get to the end of everything, but it's almost yeah. another day. So
the first thing I found, when he had a number of good guys working there, their viewpoint was mainly in compounding chemicals, and I found that their big business had been copying other people's stuff. Analyze. They were expert analysts, but they had no idea of creating things because they didn't know what was going on in the field. You know what I mean? They only, and I had worked all of these years in textile, anyhow, one of their important customers was starting a new mercerizing plant, and I had done work on some chemical assistance for this. And very quickly I developed a new method for mercerizing a system so they didn't have to boil out the goods, so go, you know, make the goods wet, go through and absorb and all that stuff. And I went down to the plants and installed them and set it up, and it was a different world for them. As time went on, I have to jump to other things, but as time went on, within a couple of years, I ended up very quickly having a 10% interest in the company, being vice president and really running the thing in many ways, because within a couple of years, the war came along. Remember, this is 39. By the time the war got started and everything going, 80-90% of all the products were things that were developed under me. And so, I mean, I was a, now we get to what was a key product. The Army, this is like 1940-41, or just when the war had started, or just before, I forget the exact years, but I get a call or letter from one of the guys at the Army Quartermaster Corps in Philadelphia that they're trying to set up the standards for mercerizing. Some of their specifications, they had mercerizing as part of the thing for uniforms or whatever. And would I help them on tests? They knew I'd done these tests. I said, so I said, look, I'll be glad. Not only that, I'll come down and talk to you. What the hell? You never know. So I go down. And I show them what to do, and they invite me to lunch. A couple of other guys, each of these guys had different departments, one like mercerizing, one like feathers, another netting, you know, they were in charge. So we go to lunch, and four or five guys, and we're talking, and one guy says to me, you got any ideas? We got a problem with this mosquito netting here. I mean, you're working in cottons, I don't know. You got some ideas? We're getting this terrible shrinkage and we don't have any control. I said, what about? I said, well, come on back, I'll show you. We go back to the thing and he shows me Trico was a knitted fabric, was known as a wart knit, that was mainly used for women's lingerie. And the Trico machine, the limited number in this United States, very complicated, called a flat knit. It's a long machine, the size of this, with knits, needles all along, very special, called warp knit. And he shows me a piece of this stuff. And he said, you know, there's this mill that's making it. It says the shrinkage is supposed to be not over 25%. Just think of this. In each direction, it says they get 40-50%. In other words, it's open. And they stretch it out. They put starch on it. And when it's washed, it seems to be used for just plain mosquito netting. It shrinks to nothing. Or even if it got wet, there's nothing. He said, He said it's supposed to be, we would accept it if it was total at 25%. That's still, at least it would have hope. But he says, we can't do this. So I said, look, you got some of this netting? That's I got an idea. It's untreated. So I said, now I remember the cellulose solution. I figured that stuff wouldn't wash out, could hold it. So I go back to the laboratory, and I take some of this net, and I pull it out on a little frame I made with pins, and I squeeze it through the cellulose solution. I make up some cellophane, cool it down, I use cellophane to time, and I squeeze it through in a wringer, cool it out on the frame, and I do the same thing with just some starch on it on the same frame. And I dry them both, then I take them out and wash them. And the stuff that I had made with my stuff don't change. Stayed out the same way. I boil it again, it don't change. The heat has coagulated the cellulose, so the fibers are wrapped in cellophane, you know. I said, Jesus, I got here, this is a way of doing this. Now, the problem is, how do you make it practical? So I go to this guy, and he says, wonderful, wonderful. He says, well, I'll arrange for you to go to this mill. Now I got to make this goddamn stuff. How do you make? So I worked out, what am I going to use in cellophane? You can't just buy sheets, just coat it and cut it up and all that. And I remember the original patent said that you could take some rayon. It was originally a test, a way of dissolving rayon. So I find, I guess somebody got some waste rayon, you know, and I cut it up with scissors, little pieces, and mix it in the solution. And it goes, dissolves quickly, almost before I got it even too cold. Went in beautiful. Jesus, I go up and we make up a few gallons of this, didn't even need a lot of cooling. And I would go up to this mill and we put some through and we frank it. It's wonderful. Jesus, we'll go and we'll use it. How in the hell do you make it? I said, well, I'll buy this goddamn rayon or something. I get some more. And it don't work. It don't go in solution. Now I have to analyze, get a hold of the other. What the hell was the difference with the other? The difference was, the only thing I could find was that the first rayon I used had been deblustered with zinc oxide. They use it, which isn't a good deluster, but it's ZNO can be used as deblustering, you know? So I go back and then I study and I read all the patent and original information. And I go back and then in Mercer's original patent, this is where you use history, you go back, it shows that if you add zinc, which is zinc oxide, so the caustic soda, it increases the swelling, increases the crinkling. I said, this must be the angle. Now I got a simple thing. I'll take zinc oxide and get plain rayon. You know, the only trouble is, that scares now, the war going on. Then I decide, well, I'll get sausage casings. From when I'm making, you know, cellophane and covering something, but then that became a mess, boiling that up. And then I went to the Rayonier that's making chemical cellulose wood pulp. And I took that and cut it up, and I found that even with the zinc cake, it didn't thoroughly dissolve. So now I figure there's only one angle. You've got to cut it back into these fine particles, like I did when I made the cellulose that was so finely cut that it lost its fiber properties and you only worked with the chemical side, this powdered stuff. So then I found a way to do that. I found that there was a company that made what was known as rayon flock. And I got them to cut and make this into flock, which is fine, a powder. And I took this cellulose, had it done that way, And then it became soluble in my sodium zincate solution. Now I had a commercial way. Now the only problem was that the viscosity of these solutions were very high. And I found, how do you reduce the viscosity of these things? Because for different applications on tension, you want to put a lot in them. Well, the next invention was a very simple thing. Cellulose in this very fine form is many times more reactive to chemicals. So I found that with peroxide, small amounts of peroxide in water with this finely comminated cellulose, I could get any degree of viscosity I wanted, depolymerized by slight oxidation. Make a long story short, I ended up with a bunch of patents on treating the cellulose in cut form with peroxide, that amounts to control of viscosity, solutions of using zinc oxide and caustic soda to dissolve cellulose, and many modifications of this. Now, it didn't seem like a big deal at the time, because after all, the amount of netting that was being used was comparatively limited. Now, there's a war now in the Pacific, which is becoming big. And there's not enough tricot machines in the world to make anywhere 1/50th of the amount of netting. That's the head nets and all this stuff that they needed. So what do you do? Well, the theoretical answer was these large numbers of lino looms. That's the kind that make these cheap curtains, you know, just weaving them now, not netting. To make a long story short, our chemicals gave the answer. They were making a certain amount of lino yarn and good, and they were using it, treating it with the Heberlein process in two places where they had equipment, which was the sulfuric acid thing of really dissolving it partially on the surface and making cellulose. My chemicals allowed any plant, everyone that had just normal equipment, to pad this on, etc. Now, along came the need for photographs. They needed stuff that was resistant to infrared. They needed to have them colored, camouflage. They needed to have resistance to mildew and all that. So we developed with other things. We ended up so that at the height of the war, there was one, these goods at the rate of 100-150 yards a minute were passed through a solution containing pigments that were mainly based on phthalocyanine blue and others, contain anti-mildew agents, contain the cellulose solution. One pass, it went through the coagulating acid wash continuously, came out dried, and Allied forces were able to obtain hundreds, it was over billions of yards of goods that they could never obtain without these inventions. Now, I got to tell you another thing. Now, where does Sylvania Industrial come about? Sylvania Industrial, in the early days of war, had gotten some patent rights on Lienfeld. If you remember any names in cellulose chemistry, Lienfeld, an Austrian chemist, worked with cellulose ethers. And he, one of his ethers, cellulose ethers, was soluble in caustic soda. My process involved not weakening the cellulose so that it dissolves, but increasing the swelling power of the caustic soda by the addition of zinc. The Lienfeld process was to make a new compound out of cellulose, which was soluble. Now that's the product that Sylvania had wanted me, theoretically, looked at me in terms of working on in the early days, but they didn't feel I was capable. Now, they come along, this is Sylvania and a couple other big companies, to wherever places where we are selling our cellulose zincate solution, come in with their cellulose ether. Now, in a couple of places, they said it's whatever price or their stuff maybe float a little better, that would work similarly to our stuff. In the meantime, I had a tie-up with the big company making pigments. What the hell's their name? Aradi was their name at the time, but they were part of one of the big pigment printing combines. And it was agreed that they would disperse pigments to make matching shades in my cellulose solution. And I would call them in to sell their stuff, you know, along with ours. In the meantime, what happened is I finally go and they make a deal with Sylvania. And Sylvania says, we'll pay you so much commission on every pound of our stuff that's sold and used along, so that every time we bring them in to our customer, the next thing we know, they got Sylvania's customer in. Well, before we got through, we had enough angles that we beat the shit out of them until I was called in. I mean, we were better salesmen and better technicians and everything else. And I get a call, and this, I don't care if this goes in the records now, I get a call from Dr. Emmerich, big, tall, German son of a bitch, chairman of the board of Sylvania Industrial. He says, young man, he said, you know, I think we ought to talk over this cellulose business. I said, remember, I'm still a kid, and I'm very innocent on the surface. I said, I'd be glad to talk. He says, well, suppose, if you mind coming down and meeting me, they had big offices in the Lincoln Building in New York. There was a New York headquarters. In the meantime, I had become a little friendly with their patent attorney, who told me why they never had me work for them, because they didn't want any Jews in the company. This was long before anything happened. So I meet with this master, and we go from one office to another to another. I remember, this is a big, tall guy. He's in his 60s or something, 65, I would say. And I walk in there, and we go about the 10th office and closes the door. And he says, you know, he says, there's no reason to have any fights or anything about this cellulose stuff. I said, no. I said, I don't want to fight. He said, well, he says, you know, we shouldn't have all these people coming in and competing. I said, that's true. I said, you went out and bought up a bunch of Dutch patents and things that you thought would interfere with mine. You're going around and telling people that you've got other patents that affect my thing, which they did. It was something sort of half related. And then there are a bunch of other patents that DuPont had that they had rights to. There were mechanical patents, such as use of ice in the manufacture. There's been a whole such thing. I said, well, I says, you caused a lot of trouble. I said, I can't work. What am I going to do? Well, he says, we'll work out. He says, we'll get you all those patents. I said, I can't. I ain't going to pay for them. I said, you can have all up for $1 a year. So, all right. He says, now we've got to keep the price right. I said, well, I says, my stuff ain't, I said, you've shown people where your stuff is better than mine. I said, I can't sell mine at the same price as yours. I couldn't, I'd be out of business. Yours is so much better. Smart ass son of a bitch, you know. Well, what do you think you'd have to do in order for us for you to get along with your stuff, which isn't so good? I said, I gotta be able to sell for about 25% more. Now my stuff is so much cheaper that I could sell it if I wanted to for 50% more, because they had to make ethers and go through this. Mine was simple cellulose. So he agreed, so we shake hands on this deal that I can go out and sell it 25% below theirs, and they won't change their price and give me all the patents. They won't let anybody else. I shake, well, he says, you know, says, I'm glad we worked out this deal. Now, I know we're violating all all the antitrust rules, and no right to do that. It's not too many years to do anything about it, but absolutely wrong. And this is, remember, this is a big subsidiary of Duke. I mean, subsidiary. They theoretically didn't own it.
Can we hang on one second?